This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to That Sports Show on Joy 94.9.
Mel, your host on That Sports Show with you tonight. It's our final show of the year, and we've got a lot on the show tonight, and we're going for an hour because those chicks are still on that end-of-season trip. Must be going well because I haven't heard from them. Maybe they'll send me a message in to tell me how they're going, fun in the sun or having a staycation or whatever. Stuart may join me later in the show, first up, what's on the show tonight? There is, of course, me talking footy, AFL, bit of cricket. The cricket tests have been played recently, soccer, horse racing, rugby league, rugby union, tennis, sailing, and of course the top 20 sport moments of the year. And joining me to have a quick chat about AFL is Anna on the line. Hello, Anna.
Good evening, Mel. I speak to you from Yak.
Sorry? Say that again.
I'm in Yak.
Oh, yes. Sorry, I couldn't hear you. The line isn't the line isn't that good.
I'm on Optus and I'm in Yak.
You're in...
Explains everything.
Okay, good, good. We broadcast all over the country, That Sports Show on Joy 94.9. And so listeners in New South Wales, Queensland and Victoria and Tasmania and South Australia and WA, as well as the two territories, hello to you tonight. Now, Anna, briefly we're going to have a chat about AFL. Sorry?
Yes.
Yes, good, thank you. Be clear. The line isn't that clear between us and yes. So,
Well, it's very clear on my end.
So oh, okay, good. Maybe it's me. Maybe I'm a bit deaf.
Now we're getting older, Malcolm.
Yeah, I am. Recently, Shane Yaron retired from the Fremantle Dockers, and
he has off-field issues now.
Yes, that's right. And so the club probably encouraged him to retire. They say they didn't, but he has retired at the young age of 27.
If it's best for his mental and physical health or his mental and emotional well-being, then it's the right thing to do.
That's right.
And it's also, in this day and age and in this climate, a very brave decision.
Yeah, that's right. And look, it's very important for him to get his life together. And I'm sure Danae, a Dockers fan, would be supportive of his moves to get his life together. Now,
these Western Australians, we don't want him ending up like Ben Cousins, do we?
No, we don't. Now, also, Bryce Gibbs is going to remain a Blue. He hit out at suggestions that his partner, Lauren, was pushing for him to move back to Adelaide, where both their families were, because they have a young child. But he's been here for such a long time. He said, I'm entrenched in Carlton. This is my place. I live in Carlton. So I played 200 games. I'm a life member. It's my home. So what's another season? You know, eventually he will retire and they'll move back to Adelaide, but at the moment he's staying put in...
funnily enough, Martin, I was born in Carlton, but I don't support Carlton.
No, you support Essendon. I was born overseas and I support Essendon.
Yes. You support Essendon.
That's right.
But yes, no, I was born and spent the first couple of years of my life in Carlton.
You did too. Now, Anna, the biggest game of the year, of course, was the grand final when the Western Bulldogs romped home with the premiership against the Sydney Swans, and that was a fairy tale end to the season. And of course,
it was one of the great moments in sport for the year. Now, in my opinion,
it was
that'll certainly be in my top 20 for the year.
Yeah,
I do apologise for the sneezing in the background if you can hear it.
No, I couldn't. So don't tell me anything. So that was the big match. But there were 10 other close matches during the season. And St Kilda beat Geelong by 1 point in round 14. That was a thriller. In the qualifying final, Geelong beat Hawthorn by 2 points to end the Hawks' aims for a four-peat, if that's what you call it.
Emulate
Beveridge's
achievements in the VLFA.
Yeah. And then Hawthorn beat the Dogs by 3 points in the third round. And then West Coast beat Greater Western Sydney by 1 point in round 21 in Sydney. Then North Melbourne...
That's a lot of under 5 point balls now.
I know. And North Melbourne scored 136 and beat Melbourne 131 in round 3 in Hobart. And then another close one was Richmond beat Sydney by 1 point at the MCG in round 8. Then Adelaide beat Sydney by 10 points in round 4 at the Adelaide Oval. And then
that one almost doesn't count. Double figures.
Yeah. And then Hawthorn beat Adelaide by 3 points in round 5 at the MCG. And then the Dogs beat Sydney in the grand final by 22 points. That was second top match. But the top match was actually the preliminary final where the Dogs beat Greater Western Sydney by 6 points in Sydney. And I remember watching that match. It was such an exciting last quarter.
And everybody said they couldn't win it.
Yeah, and then they went on and won the grand final by 22 points. Now, of course, the player of the year was Patrick Dangerfield, who won the Brownlow. So
that means he's the player of the year or the most one who got the most umpires, but...
Well, in my book, Player of the Year, Anna.
just checking. Because,
yeah.
You know, who won the AFL players? The player's player of the year.
Oh, probably was him.
Player of the year.
Probably was. I'm not quite sure.
Haven't done your research.
No, I'm
neither only... of us have done our research.
Oh, now. I've done enough, Anna, to talk a little bit of footy in the girls' absence. I know, well, they're better than me.
And, but... of course, one player not retiring is Bob Murphy, who's coming back for another go next year.
Well, of course,
Well, at least he's come up well enough from the injury. Mm. And who knows if they can make it a fairy tale repeat and he can get his own medal instead of the wonderful gesture that Beveridge instantly became the most liked man in Australia.
Yes, when he gave him his medal, but he did give it back.
Oh, that wouldn't surprise me at all about Bob Murphy.
No, well, he said, "I didn't earn it," and so he's given it back, so...
Jobe hasn't actually given his medal back to the AFL. Although the replacement Brownlows have been awarded, Jobe's one hasn't actually turned up at AFL House yet.
Well, Anna, we would presume it will soon. Now,
we would hope so, being Essendon supporters.
That's right. You're on that sports show on Joy 94.9.
You're on that sports show on Joy 94.9.
Yes, that's Sports Show, Joy 94.9. Now, Anna, it's been a big week in sport. Now, the Aussies finally won a cricket match in a test match against Pakistan at the Gabba, a day-night test with the pink ball. And in the end, I thought they were going to romp it in. They only won by 39 runs.
But even more exciting was the return of Kerry O'Keefe to the airwaves.
Oh, right. Okay. I didn't have time to listen to that. I was at work.
Even more sadly.
Yes.
He's now working on a commercial radio station's cricket broadcasting, which is available online through the Cricket Australia app. We're advertising anything.
Mm.
But since you can't even listen to the ABC Radio's version of the cricket online except through the Cricket Australia app. I guess I better mention the Cricket Australia app.
Yeah. No, Anna, we're not talking about that.
We're almost the best comeback since Lazarus.
No, Anna, we're talking about the game, not about the commentators.
I'm talking about the cricket match.
Yeah.
Pakistan almost off the biggest comeback since Lazarus, Malcolm.
True. They were set 450-something to win and...
Ridiculously large number.
And I thought that Australia should have batted so the lead was over 500 at least, because there was plenty of time to bowl them out, even if they were, you know, not scoring runs and just staying at the crease, or even if they were trying to score lots of runs. I would have thought just go for a bit, you know, a bit more. But the batting was good. Smith got another century, and Hanscom as well, debut test century.
Smith was later castigated for his tactics in not batting longer.
Well, I just said
he's
that.
Captain, and it's his job on the field. But he you know, he was a hero after his century on the opening day, and then he was a zero after Monday when we nearly lost the match.
Well, that were my thoughts. But, you know, you shouldn't castigate him. He made the right decision at the right time that, based on the conditions and thinking the Pakistanis wouldn't score any runs.
That's the information he had.
Yeah. So, and I'm sure he would have had advisors in his ear. But good on them. Second test is at the MCG starting Boxing Day. And
will you be there, Mal?
No, I won't. I'll be in Sydney. But the weather forecast is terrific for the first 2 days that I know of. I don't know what the forecast beyond that is. Do you know?
No, because I'm only going for the first day.
Oh, okay. Now, a surprise potential pick for the Boxing Day Test squad.
A surprise addition to the squad, you could call it.
Yeah, is unheralded West Australian all-rounder Hilton Cartwright. Now, I've never even heard of him until I saw him on the news the other night. He hasn't played many first-class matches, so they're thinking, though, because he's a seamer and he can bat at first-class average about 45.
He's a batting all-rounder who can seam the ball, who works with the seam of the ball, as opposed to James Faulkner, for example, who's just scored his maiden first-class century. But Cartwright is seen by the selectors as a possibly more useful member of the squad at this stage, although we don't even know if he'll play because, as Trevor Holmes, the chairman of selectors, said...
Yes.
The fast bowlers have to put in a lot of work in Brisbane and they may be too tired or too have picked up something, some niggling thing that will preclude them from performing to their best in Melbourne.
Yes.
And so Cartwright is seen as a good option because he's a seamer as well as a batsman.
Well, that's right, because they went into Brisbane with six batsmen and four bowlers and potentially they need a fifth bowler, and Cartwright being a batsman but who can bowl, that is a good option for them, and that's why he's in the mix. Excuse me. Oh, talking too much. Right.
Never, Malcolm, never.
Now, moving on to soccer, Anna.
Yes, indeed.
A new broadcast deal has been signed by Foxtel with Football Federation.
That's about $57.5 million a year for 8 years, was it, or six?
I'd say six. Six, five, so 30, six, sevens of 42. Yeah, 6 years.
Yeah, I think Frank Lowy was originally hoping for $80 million a year, but his successor, his son Stephen, at the FFA, is very happy with this deal. And of course, Foxtel can't tie up the Socceroos games, right, because that's on the anti-siphoning list, so they've got to be on free-to-air as well.
That's right.
And the FFA has not as yet negotiated the one free-to-air primetime match that will be allowed to be shown on free-to-air television.
Yep. Yes, go first.
But that's, I'd say that's a pretty good deal, $57 million a year over 6 years.
Look, it sounds like a good deal.
Down to the lower club.
It sounds like a good deal, but I always think that pay television, not as many people have access to it, so they don't have as much access to the sport as free-to-air. But Foxtel's got the money.
Well, they certainly have now that they're not. But now that they haven't got the Premier League, which is now only available on online services through Optus.
I think that's bizarre too.
It's extremely bizarre because you can't even get it on Optus if you've got prepaid on Optus.
And
you have to pay a certain amount per month to Optus on your contract to be eligible to have the Premier League. So the Premier League shot itself in the foot. It may have been offered more money by Optus, but I don't see how, unless Optus makes it, like, resells the rights on to some sort of TV provider.
Yeah.
How are they going to make the money back, and B, whether the contract is going to be sustainable, whether they'll be able to keep paying the bill.
Yeah.
And the Premier League shot itself in the foot because the audience is much, much smaller.
Yes, it is. It is. It's unusual.
And if it wasn't for Foxtel, it wouldn't have the audience that it does have.
Well,
because pubs and clubs have Foxtel,
And
that's where a lot of people go and see the matches.
Yes.
There are gatherings in the major cities for supporters of nearly all the Premier League, probably all the Premier League clubs, and there are regional gatherings. And it's a bit kind of, oh, well, we're going to stream the footy on the internet, but it's going to be able to break up a little bit because we haven't got the NBN yet because we're in a regional area.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's going to be really cool.
Yeah, no. I'm
aren't going to go to that.
No, they aren't. Now, moving on, Anna, from one alleged shambles to another, Victorian Racing's in shambles because it's...
Oh, I thought we were going to move sideways into another football code.
No, we'll get to that. Racing Victoria's chief executive, Bernard Saundry...
announced his departure at the beginning of the year.
That's right. And also David Moody, he's quit because of the association with the Cobalt case. And he resigned last Thursday.
And then all of a sudden, the chairman of the VRC.
Yes, and that's Michael Byrne. He's stepped down and he's issued a statement informing the public of his decision, saying that he feared he would be subject to conflict of interest claims and therefore he felt that it was prudent for him to step down.
Interestingly, he released this statement in the middle of an afternoon's racing hosted by the VRC.
That's right.
He was hoping for it to be buried in the racing results, I think.
Yeah, and look, he works for Macquarie Bank and that's part of the Pacific Consortium, which has... put
a bid for Tabcorp.
Yes, so you know he's trying to be at arm's length, and
he's trying to do the right thing, yeah. Unlike other people who haven't done the right thing.
That's right. So watch this space for
one could think that Racing Victoria and its subsidiary clubs is in some sort of disarray, because if the chief executive of Racing Victoria announced his departure at the end of the year, 12 months ago. They've not yet made an announcement on who his replacement is.
I know.
Have they employed anyone? Have they got a shortlist?
Well, that's up to Martin.
Enough money?
Anna, that's up to Martin Pakula. Now, moving on to other sports, because we spent a lot of time on some of these earlier sports. In National Rugby League, Alex McKinnon, former Newcastle Knights player, who was paralysed after a
very dangerous tackle.
Yes, is now suing the NRL and the player who tackled him, Jordan McLean.
Allegedly.
Yeah, allegedly. So,
the court documents have yet been cited, but he's told the NRL that he is taking him to court because the NRL owned the Newcastle Knights, with whom he was playing at the time.
Mm.
Therefore, the NRL was his ultimate employer.
That's right.
And he has every right to sue the man who threw him, because it was an illegal throw anyway.
Mm.
He was told at the time that he would have a job for life in rugby league, and indeed he does currently work in rugby league.
Yeah.
But
you know, that's not enough. That's not enough to care.
I don't see that anybody can argue with the fact that he probably needs more financial security than he's got.
That's right, Anna. Working a job, that's not going to pay his rehab costs for the rest of his life. So we'll see how that one pans out, and we'll keep everyone informed.
It'll be interesting.
Yeah. Now, briefly...
In one of the other rugby codes, an Italian player in a club match physically tackled the female referee.
I know.
Good on Italian rugby for having a female referee of a high enough calibre to referee the chief umpire. She's refed at the Women's World Cup. She's refed at senior level for men's rugby as well as women's. And
at the Olympics too. But she
and the player hasn't been heard to make an apology.
Yeah, anyway.
The club has apologised on his behalf, but he hasn't been heard from.
Well, he's been banned for 3 years, and she went to hospital and she had whiplash, poor love. Her name was...
Oh, poor love.
Yeah.
Maria Beatrice something.
Benvenuti. And we wish her well.
Benvenuti.
Yeah. Now, in tennis,
Maria.
In overnight news, Petra Kvitova, two-time Wimbledon champion, was attacked in a home invasion by a knife-wielding intruder, and he attacked her left hand, which is her playing.
Well, defending herself.
Yeah,
she used her left hand because that's her natural hand.
Yeah, and she got...
And she's had to have surgery on it, four hours of microsurgery.
Mm, and so she's... out of the game until she can recover. But she tweeted saying that in attempt to defend myself, I was badly injured in my left hand. I'm shaken but fortunate to be alive. The injury is severe and I will need to see specialists. But if you know anything about me, I'm strong and I'll fight this. Thank you again for your love and support. So we wish her...
And one of the supporters she's got is Anna Shapitadze, who in 2008, when she was number 6 in the world, she and her family were... assaulted in their own home, tied up with TV cables and the like.
Yeah.
And Chaka Tadsi never recovered to where she had been before after that.
No.
And she says that the most important thing for Kvitova will be emotional and moral and mental support, because that's the thing that stays with you after a thing of this nature.
Yeah, that's right. And only just previously, Kvitova was playing the Hopman Cup in Perth, but had withdrawn because of a foot injury. And so she was recovering from her foot injury, but she won't be playing anytime soon. So we wish her well.
No.
Now, Anna, briefly, the Australian Open wildcard spots were played and won for over the weekend. And Melbourne teenagers, Omar Jasika, 19, beat John Patrick Smith to win the coveted wild card. And Jamie Forlis, 17-year-old, from Melbourne, beat... beat Abby Myers, 7-6, 7-5, to win the women's wild card. And this is after she had played the 18-and-under tournament last week and was runner-up in that. And the winner of that, Destiny Aiva, 16, won the wild card. And she's the youngest... the first player born in the 2000s to play in a Grand Slam tournament, and she'll be playing next year.
Play in the main draw.
Yeah, that's right.
Given that they're not allowed to play on the tour, the women are not allowed to play on the tour until they're 16 now.
Yeah.
And even then, it's very limited participation, because we'll never see again the prodigy 13, 14 and 15-year-olds.
No, we won't. Now, Anna, we have very little time.
So good luck to both of them.
Yep. Now, we have very little time, and I'm just going to run through quickly that the Sydney Hobart yacht race starts on Boxing Day, and it's 72nd edition, and you race from Sydney Harbour all the way to the Derwent River, and the smallest boat...
The race
be
starts on Sydney Harbour on Boxing Day.
Yeah, and the smallest boat...
from 30 feet.
To 100 feet, but you cannot be under 18, and it starts at 1 o'clock.
They only introduced that no under 18 rule after the disastrous 1998 race when six sailors died in the race.
Yes, Anna, time is upon us. So let me just finish the story. Sid Fisher is firing the gun because he's no longer racing at age 89. And the record...
And his boat, formerly named Sid Fisher's Ragamuffin, will be competing under a new name.
With his grandson at the helm. And the record for the Sydney Hobart was 2012, Wild Oats 11, 1 day, 18 hours, 23 minutes and 12 seconds. So it's very exciting, and we will be looking forward to hearing more about that. Now, coming up, we're going to be talking to Sebastian and Mikhail from Team Melbourne about the Team Melbourne Sports Festival, which is happening in the new year. You're on That Sports Show on Joy 94.9.
You're on That Sports Show on Joy 94.9.
Now, I'm being joined in the studio by Sebastian and Mikhail from Team Melbourne. Hello, boys.
Hey, Malcolm. How are you going?
Good, thanks. Hi. We're here to have a quick chat about at this part of the year, about coming up early next year is the Team Melbourne Sports Festival. And here on That Sports Show, we're very much into supporting Team Melbourne and what it does. Now, Sebastian, the Team Melbourne Sports Festival is on when?
So the Team Melbourne Sports Festival is on February 4th in next year, which is a week later than normal.
But oh, okay.
Yeah, we've kept it away from all the other major events of midsummer so that people can get a bit of a rest in between.
Oh, so it's the Pride March the week before, is it?
It is. The Pride March is the week before.
Because it's hard to try and do that on the Saturday and the Pride March on the Sunday. Everyone gets a bit exhausted. Is that right?
Yeah. Look, I think it's midsummer is such an amazing time of the year for our community. And I think that it's hard to get to everything because there's just so many great things on.
And so you decided a week later where people are still in the midsummer mood, but you... They don't have to fight with other events, and they can. You might get more people along or different people along.
Yeah, well, he's hoping.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. And it's again at Footscray Park?
It is. So we'll be at Footscray Park and Victoria University. So all of the indoor sports will be played at the VU campus, and then the outdoor sports will be at Footscray Park.
Out on the grass. Let's hope it rains over summer, and so it's not a dust bowl. It has been in the past. Now... Michael, what do you prefer?
Mikhail is fine.
Mikhail. Now, what are the three aims for the Team Melbourne Sports Festival?
We are trying to get most... the main one is that we're trying to get more of the LGBTI community involvement in sport.
Yes.
And we're trying to keep all the sports clubs together.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to promote health benefits of sport.
Yes.
And trying to build a stronger connection between clubs.
Good. No, that's good. They're very important aims to promote sport within the community because, you know, get people off the couch, off their games and out of the nightclubs and out there playing some sport. Isn't that right, Seb?
Absolutely. And I think, look, the sports festival is a great opportunity for lots of people to come down mm-hmm. and try a different types of sports as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's absolutely for everyone and anyone, which is probably the best part of the sports festival.
Yeah, and I know that in the past that people have come down who have played, say, rugby and they've tried at badminton and badminton's become their new sport.
Yeah, look, I think the best part of the day is that you can try any of the sports.
Yep.
And you never know what you might find as the sport that you would prefer. For some people, it could just be even changing schedule within their personal lives. So they're looking for something different to do on a different night.
Sure.
And look, you've got people like Mikhail who plays two sports. So he's involved in both volleyball and wrestling, which is great to, you know, cross over to different sports.
Oh, you're with the Wranglers?
Yes.
I have a Wranglers bag on the floor I was given by Chris when he came on the show once. So I use that as my sports bag. So,
I didn't even know we had bags.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
I'll have to talk to them about it.
Yeah, you need to get a bag. The sports being offered last year, there were 20. Is it still 20 or more this year? Got some new ones?
Yeah, look, we've got some very different involvement this year. And right. Mikhail and I, obviously on behalf of Team Melbourne, have spent a bit of time with Cricket Victoria and Netball Victoria.
Yes.
And had a more in-depth involvement with those two sports in particular.
Like
over the course of the year, they're the ones that have gotten the most amount of inquiries through our website and stuff. So
really, cricket.
Yeah, cricket's a big one. Yeah.
Oh,
so
good.
I think where both netball and cricket are placed at the moment within the LGBTI community.
Yeah.
It's great to see them absolutely, you know, take it by the horns and
good.
Come along.
Because I do remember in the past that we used to get a lot of inquiries about AFL and cricket and netball, and there was nowhere for people to go. And this could be the catalyst for something to build from that.
Yeah. So look, Netball Vic and Cricket Vic are going to be with us at Carnival as well.
Yes.
And they'll be, I suppose, letting people know about their session on the day.
Mm.
And then that way, the idea of it is much like how the other sports have started.
Yes.
Is that the come along to one place at one time, meet mm-hmm. other people that are interested in that sport, and mm-hmm. then hopefully form a committee of management or at the very least, a group of people that like playing the sport regularly. Well,
that's right. And that's how some of the other clubs have formed, such as badminton. Now, is there any Australian rules involvement this year?
We haven't got a club locked in as yet. So we're hoping to, particularly mm-hmm. with the Women's League starting next year.
Oh, yeah. So exciting.
Yeah.
On that sports show and Chicks Talking Footy, the Chicks love the Women's League and they're so excited that it's starting. And I'm so amazed and proud that it is starting. And I'm sure you'll get a lot of women inquiring about AFL. So hopefully you get some future stars of the Women's League down there.
Well, he's hoping. Fingers crossed. Yeah, we've got the Diversity 9 or the Diversity Football group coming down as well on the
okay.
day, so they'll be there and looking for new recruits as well. So
fantastic.
If you're interested in AFL, then come along.
Okay, now I'm just reading in some of your notes here that you gave me before the show. There's a queer family space on the day. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so we've tried to expand the idea of what the sports festival actually mm-hmm. involves this year, and we've been working with Proud to Play, an organisation that's relatively new and working in the queer youth space. And
yes,
sport.
We've had them on the show.
Yeah, and the guys from there have been amazing. And so we thought this year that perhaps we'd start a little bit earlier and get the kids involved in sport as well, and even just provide a space for families to come down and just relax for the duration of the day.
And so what, like they can sit on a rug and have something to eat and just watch, or maybe one parent be involved and the other minds the kids or something.
They can do whatever they like. They can come. The idea is that we create a more inclusive environment
atmosphere.
And just reminding people that sport's not just for your single white male. It's for absolutely everyone.
Families as well.
Yeah,
GLBTI rainbow families. And I also see you having performers on stage from 11 till 2:30.
So again, we've worked closely with the Maribyrnong City Council, who are our major sponsors of the day, to create a festival that they are also incredibly proud of.
Yep.
So they've loved having us in Maribyrnong for the last four or five years, and we've absolutely loved having them as well. And
love them in their sponsorship.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I think they've really gotten behind us and behind any of the initiatives. So together with them, we've decided this year that we'd take it up a notch and have some performers on the stage.
Yeah.
And as well as obviously the family space and a few other activities that are happening on the day as well.
Oh, that's fantastic. And your ambassador is Christina Andrews, local drag queen. And I see that there'll be obstacle courses and fun activities for all to be had on the day. I love obstacle courses, so I think I might do that one.
Yeah.
I hope to get down there on the 4th of February. I'll have to diarise it because it's after it's the weekend after it usually is. For those regulars listening, it's on Saturday the 4th of February from 10 a.m. or 9 a.m.
9 a.m.
From 9 a.m. At Footscray Park and Victoria University in the city of Maribyrnong. So Seb and Mikhail, thanks for joining me tonight. We might have you on again for a last minute push just before the festival. I do know that we have Australian Open in the last couple of weeks of January, but maybe the Wednesday before, maybe diarise it again and just put the word out, because this is the end of the year. This show will be repeated, so listeners or other people might hear it the second time. So we look forward to Team Melbourne Sports Festival in 2017. You're on That Sports Show on Joy 94.9. We'll wrap up the year with the top 20 sporting moments and people.
You're on That Sports Show on Joy 94.9.
Yes, That Sports Show, Joy 94.9 with Mal. And Stu's joined me for the final session. Hi, Stu. Welcome back.
Hi, Mal. Thanks for having me on. I'm sorry I missed the first part of the program, but I heard it. You're wonderful.
Oh, thanks. No, yeah. you've been doing a course, so I understand. But we've got the top 20 moments. And are you still with us?
I am indeed, Mal.
Okay, good. So, Stu, you and I are going to talk about the final top 20 sporting moments. Now, I'm going to go from 20 down to 1, and so I'll name them.
Can I squeeze one in, Mel?
You will.
Hang on a minute. You don't get to name them.
No, I have to.
Well, where do they come from? It's not like some, you know, not like champagne or something.
But I've got it here. You haven't got it in front of you.
I've got my own 20.
We haven't got time for 60. Anna, you give me your top sporting moment now. Quick.
Well, right now, Natasha Bryant and Annie Wilmot have just won the World Youth 29ers Sailing Championship. So are they Australia's last world champions for the year?
Well done, Anna. Yes. Love it.
Okay. Stuart, okay, your top sporting moment.
The Rio Olympics. We all said it would never happen, but Brazil came through with a fabulous Games.
No, that's pretty good. And you're very much into Rio at the moment, aren't you?
I sure am.
Now,
That was a good noise, Malcolm.
Yeah. Now, the top 20 sporting moments, according to Ando from the Herald Sun, Jason Kenny, number 20, UK cycling. He won Rio gold in many events.
It's not the top moments.
No, Anna, I'm going from 20 down to 1. 20 down to 1. Jason Kenny got lots of gold. Then Bowden Barrett from New Zealand in rugby union. Scored 223 points for the Hurricanes. Number 18 is Almaz Ayana from Ethiopia, who smashed the 10,000-metre record at the Rio Olympics. Remember that one, Anna?
Yes, but unfortunately the record she smashed was one of those doping Chinese girls.
That's right.
And so people are looking at her record, her new record, with even more skepticism. It's very sad.
Well, Anna, in that race, the first 10 or first 5 or so went under the world record. So unless they're all doping or they just had an amazing race, we'll see. Number 17 on the...
Maybe they dragged each other to the finish line.
That's right. And number 17, Novak Djokovic. He won the Australian and the French and he held all 4 Grand Slams at one time but didn't have as good a second part of the year and has slipped to number 2 in the rankings behind Andy Murray. Number 16, Conor McGregor. He's from mixed martial arts. Okay, never heard of him. Number 15, Virat Kohli, the Indian captain, did well for his team. Number 14, Steph Curry, US basketball. And number 13, Nico Rosberg won the World Championship in Formula One.
And then promptly retired.
That's right, on top. Number 12, Lionel Messi from Argentina. Lionel Messi, he won the Ballon d'Or, giving him 4
He has 5 Ballon d'Or, but he was beaten this year by Cristiano Ronaldo, the pencil head from Portugal.
Yes, who has 4. 11, number 11, Andy Murray, who won Olympic gold, the US Open, the Wimbledon, and is now number 1. He didn't win the US Open, sorry. Stan Wawrinka did. Number 10, Simone Biles, the 19-year-old American who won 4 Olympic gold in gymnastics. Number 9, Gennady Golovkin, who from Kazakhstan. He nicknamed the Triple G. Because his middle name begins with a G, and he went undefeated in 36 professional fights. And he knocked out 17 straight opponents in world title fights since 2010, including 2 in 2016. Wow. Number 8, Elaine Thompson from Jamaica. What did Elaine Thompson do, Anna?
She's the female equivalent of Usain Bolt. Now she won the 100 and 200 at the Olympics to become the first woman since Flojo. Mm. Let's hope she doesn't end up the same way.
Mm. And she is now in the top 5. Of all time in both events. She seemed to come from nowhere, but I was so going for Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce to see if she would win 3 in a row, but she got bronze. She still medalled. Now, that's right. Number 7, Wade Van Niekerk. He ran in lane 8 in the final of the 400 metres of the Olympics and without having anyone ever pass him, so he was always in front, and he won the gold, and he won in a world record time, in a time that no one ever thought would be beaten, Michael Johnson's record from 1999 World Championships in Seville, Spain, of 43.18. He won the race in 43.03. And he also became the only ever athlete to break 10 seconds for 100, 20 seconds for the 200, and 44 seconds for the 400. Wow.
In the same year.
Yep. Wow. Then number 6, Mo Farah. Born in Somalia before moving to London as a child, the 33-year-old Farah moved into new territory by winning the 5,000 and the 10,000 Olympic double for the second time. He won in London in 2012 and Rio in 2016. And there has never been a better middle distance runner, with him winning 17 of the last 20 major races. Now, I read about him. He has an identical twin brother who his family left during war times in Somalia with other people, and then they lost touch with him, and he didn't meet his brother until they were adults again. And his brother's now married with children. But interesting, an identical twin brother, and they lost touch during war conflict in Somalia. Number 5, and the only woman in the top 5, is Katie Ledecky. Only Michael Phelps could prevent her from being named Swimmer of the Rio Games after she got 4 gold and a silver. And her golds included world records in the 400 and the 800. And her third individual title came in the 200 free, which was considered her most vulnerable. And then she won the 4x200. And was she in the 4x100, Anna? I'm not sure.
I don't remember. Stuart, you're more up on Brazilian things than I am.
Stuart's had to step out. It's just you and me, Anna. So I think it must have been the 4x100 because she wouldn't have made the medley team. Then LeBron James, number 4. The King, only age 31, lacked at least one more NBA championship ring before he could be spoken as rivaling Michael Jordan. And he achieved that in the most stunning fashion, lifting the Cleveland Cavaliers from 3-1 down to beat the Golden State Warriors, and they won 4-3 and won the NBA. And he was also had its NBA MVP in Steph Curry in the same team, who we previously mentioned at number 14. Number three on the list, Anna, Cristiano Ronaldo, who we talked about earlier.
Pencilhead.
He required a major... He did very well. He got Portugal to win the European Championship. Also became the all-time leading goal scorer, and he won a penalty for Real Madrid in the Champions League final, and he won that Ballon d'Or. So, wow. Number two.
The Ballon d'Or is the golden ball, and
yes,
it's the prize for the best player in world soccer.
That's right, and he's won four, and Messi's won five. Now, number two, Anna, who's number two and who's number one?
You tell us, Mel.
All right, number two, Michael Phelps. Many would have him number one after he returned to the sport to win four gold and one silver at the Rio Games, giving him 23 Olympic gold medals. That's amazing. Very few swimmers...
Well, actually, his silver medal is one of my moments of the year. The Singaporean schoolboy...
Yes.
Schooling,
yes.
...who won gold in the 100-metre butterfly, Michael Phelps' special event...
Yeah.
One of my sporting moments of the year, Mel.
Yeah, that's right. And so that was his silver. And 23 gold medals. Very few swimmers in history can dominate their sport at the age of 31, as Phelps did. He may lack the showmanship of number one, but his achievements came with grace and manners in front of his son and partner, who he since married. Now, number one was Usain Bolt. He won three straight Olympic 100 metres titles. But then he also did the same in the 200 and the 4x100 relay. So he's won the 1, the 2 and the 4x1 at three straight games, and that's unheard of. And he's only 30. And we've witnessed the greatest sprinter in history and arguably the sport's most natural showman. To think he now believes he could have been better had he trained harder when he was younger. Anyway.
Do you think Elaine Thompson can equal his feat in the women's side?
She's 24, she'd be 28 and then 32. We'll see. We will see. So
clearly not, he's still running in her 40s.
Yeah, so very interesting. So, Stuart, can you just tell me, you agree with Usain Bolt being number one?
Oh, absolutely. I just thought the three race outcome that he had and the fact that he's done it in three games in a row, it's just an amazing effort. And how privileged are we to have seen such an athlete in the last 12 years for us?
Yeah. Anyway, that's been terrific. Now, that's been That Sports Show for this year. Stuart and Anna.
Very quickly.
Yes.
Very quickly, Mel. And the other two sporting moments of the year were Chloe Esposito's gold.
Yes. Yes, for Australia. Yes, and?
And... One Martin Del Potro.
Yeah, okay. Yes. All right. All right. Thank you, Anna, for joining us this year.
Thanks, Mel, for hosting and panelling every week. You've been fantastic.
Oh, you've done one or two.
You've done an amazing job, Mel.
Yeah. Anyway, Anna, we will speak to you in the new year. Thanks for joining us. Now, Stuart, thank you for joining us. Dear Santa, bring me a man for Christmas.
Do you know what? He's on a plane on the way now. Listeners.
I know. I've got one at
home. So Santa did his best.
Yeah, he did. And we'll see you in the new
year. You've been on That Sports Show.
On Joy 94.9.
You're on That Sports Show on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.